All right. Thank you. Boy, this is a formidable group, and I'm just a really simple surgeon. So, and I'm running in and out of the OR this morning, so excuse me for leaving right after this. I would actually like to point out Dr. David Vera, who's here in the audience, who I think the biggest message that I'm going to send today is not just this science, but that how a pure collaboration between a basic scientist and a clinician can really make it work. And so I'm not going to pretend to be a chemist or a radiophysics or physicist or anything like that. I'm going to tell you how we started with this agent, where it came from, where it is now, and kind of give you an idea of what it takes to make this situation work. Basically, Dr. Vera came to me in 1999. I was 8 months pregnant with my second child, basically. We talked about the sentinel node technique. Sentinel node is a technique where the patient with a cancer, particularly a breast cancer or melanoma, the cancer drains to that first lymph node called the sentinel node. And basically, when it was adopted, the agent that we use for sentinel node imaging was pretty much brought off from the shelf. So there really was no market for sentinel node imaging or a radiolabeled particle that was used for this use. So Dr. Vera, in his work at UC Davis, he's a radiochemist and had worked on imaging agents. And he came to me and he said, 1997 was about when sentinel node started to take off, and there were a lot of issues with the technique. There was a lot of variability in how it was being done, false negative rates that were being reported at that time of anywhere from 10 to 20%. And he came and said, what do you think about the idea of trying to systematize this technique with a better agent? And so he introduced this agent to me, which I'm going to, for the sake of things, call it Lymphoseq, because that's really what the trade name is. Tilmanocet is a little bit harder to say. This is the general molecule. And basically, it has a dextran backbone. The receptor substrate is mannose, for the mannose binding receptor in reticular endothelial cells. It has a DTPA chelator. And the radio label is technetium. And basically, there wasn't anything in this molecule that hadn't been used in human beings before, but it had never been put together in this manner. And the FDA has a whole section on imaging agents and how you have to take them from basically bench to bedside. So if you look at what I'm going to do is kind of go through the timeline of how a lot of this occurred. So Dr. Vera originally had funding from the California Breast Cancer Research Program to do a lot of the radiochemistry, et cetera. And then he had funding from NCI to optimize the chemical design and whatnot. And then it was in 1999 when I met him. So he had already done much of the preclinical work. In 1999, we continued to go on and do some of the animal studies, the toxicology studies, et cetera. At that time, really the only thing that was funded by any kind of company was a few of the toxicology studies in dogs. Then in early 2000, we started applying for grant funding, and so our first grant funding for looking at putting this into clinical trial was by the Komen Foundation. So all of the early preclinical work and phase one clinical work was peer-reviewed, not done by a company. So the specific reason really to look at this agent, this is kind of the first of a process of molecular targeted imaging. It was targeting the mannose receptor in reticular endothelial cells. Other cellular distribution for this agent is dendritic cells, the M2 macrophages, so the agent is taken up by the liver. There was no pharmacology done for this, you know, for anything like this at this time, and basically we needed to develop a molecule that would go to high capacity receptors, basically. The first thing for us was getting funding. So the first funding that we got for the phase one was the Susan G. Komen Foundation, and they funded us to do a phase one in breast cancer. the goal of an imaging agent, so the what our goal was in this phase one is that what happens in Sentinel Node is that the patient goes to the nuclear medicine suite, they are injected in their breast with an imaging agent, and that imaging agent is then supposed to travel to the most important lymph node. But what happens with the one that's on the shelf, which is basically technetium sulfocalloid, is in certain patients that imaging agent just sits in that site and doesn't move, and so you can't find the sentinel node, or it travels to lots of sentinel nodes and you get like 10 nodes, or the patient is downstairs under the camera for like 3 or 4 hours waiting for it to clear and waiting for you to be able to see a sentinel node. So our target here was something that would clear the injection site really quickly, and then only stick to the most important lymph nodes, via, i.e. the sentinel nodes, not go to like 10 nodes, something like that. So the first thing really to look at our molecule was, does it work? Does it clear fast? Does it get to the sentinel node? The chemical design of this agent is such that we had to have the right number of mannose particles in order to basically flood only the sentinel node, stick to the sentinel node, and stay there. So basically, the take-home message of this is that we had to have sub-nanomolar affinity, basically, so that it would travel to the sentinel node, stick to the sentinel node, and then not go to 4 more nodes because it was traveling to more receptors. Phase one was a Susan G. Komen study. We then met. Basically, right before that, I forgot to put in there. I had to actually have a meeting with the FDA in order to get the IND. So I was the physician doing this. Dr. Vera was the inventor, but now I was the physician. So this is the first piece of little information I'm going to say. Everything that we do, there's a whole reel of paperwork that we have to do, but it gets down to actually having that discussion on the phone with the FDA. When right before we put this into humans, we'd already gotten the grant from Komen. The people at the FDA, challenged me with a lot of questions. One of the questions they said is, how do you know it's not teratogenic in a woman who might eventually become pregnant? And I actually had to really stand up and say, well, we're already injecting technetium into them, and that's never been FDA approved, and we pulled it off the shelf. So I actually had to be a little argumentative with the FDA and say, why are you asking me to do something that you're not asking what's already on the shelf? And so, and the FDA agent actually backed down and said, okay, that does make sense. You're already using this. And so we got the physician alien, and we were able to go forward. So it takes that clinician to actually kind of answer the question in a logical way that sometimes all of the paperwork doesn't fully do. So the FDA looks at a radiopharmaceutical and says, okay, the purpose of a phase one is for a medical imaging device is to evaluate the radiopharmacokinetics and a preliminary assessment of safety, biologic safety. So it's a little bit different than some drug FDA phase ones. So our first phase one had 24 patients. You can see the ages here. And basically, the bottom line is lymphocyte worked. It went to a sentinel node. It traveled there very fast, and there were absolutely no safety issues. And this is one of our first images. And I'm sorry, I don't have an image of technetium sulfocalloid. But basically, what can happen with tech colloid is that big blob that you see right here is the injection site. Technetium sulfocalloid doesn't clear very fast, and so that injection site basically sits there. This is lymphocyte, and you can see that there's a nice little step off between the injection site and the lymph node. This is really important in the OR. If I don't have this step off and I'm using a gamma counter, I can't find the difference between the injection site and my lymph node, and I have no way to find that lymph node. So this is huge, the fact that we see this step off really nicely. So, and this is graphically showing the same thing, that technetium sulfocalloid has a half-life of 15 hours, hadn't cleared hardly at all, or beyond 15 hours, hadn't cleared hardly at all at 15 hours, and lymphocyte was already clearing at 3.2 hours. And that makes a huge difference down in the camera time. You can see this image really quickly. So again, the potential significance at this point was easier to find, a lower false negative rate, fewer excised lymph node, and greater ease of scheduling because it drained so fast. So the next thing was the American Cancer Society. The FDA said we had to do each phase one for each disease. So the next one was a funding for melanoma, and the American Cancer Society funded that one. They made us compare again to filtered sulfocalloid. Even though technetium filtered colloid was not an FDA-approved agent, they made us compare it to that. And this time we looked at different molar doses. And this just shows, again, this is a forearm injection. We don't have the injection site here, but within a few minutes, there was a lymph node under the arm in melanoma. And that's very nice, too, because melanoma often is very, very distal from where your lymph node is, and it can take hours to drain there. And this drained very quickly. Nice image. And you can see here that the percent of injected dose was 0.42%. That is really high, actually. For technetium sulfur colloid, it's something in the 100th percent. So we get a lymph node that has taken that up, and that's going to sit there. That could sit there for a day, and so we have a lot of ease of scheduling. We could do the injection the day before and then still see this lymph node. And again, graphically, you can see that the clearance is strikingly different. The next thing in here was one more phase one, because now we wanted to see if we did the injection the day before or if we specifically focused on the really difficult patient. So the difficult breast cancer patient is the one who has very, very fatty breasts or is older, or who has an upper outer quadrant tumor where you inject the radioactivity and it doesn't clear very well, it doesn't drain to the lymph node, and you can't find it. And I'll tell you, I still have one or two a week, you know, because we're still using tech colloid, because we just got FDA approved for lymphoseek. I have one or two cases a week where it's very difficult to find the sentinel node. And now the accuracy of the sentinel node is so important. And so the next study was to look at these two groups. Older patients, older than 60, non-palpable disease in the upper outer quadrant. We now changed to an intradermal injection because of where the literature was going. Some of these patients were also given the agent the day before to see whether or not we could still easily see the sentinel node the next day. What we expected, technetium sulfur colloid, we expect that at 24 hours or 15 hours, at least 80% is still there, and lymphoseek, only 2% would still be there. And then this is exactly what we saw. We saw that at 2 hours, most of lymphoseek was gone from the injection site, and that most of it was still, with technetium sulfur colloid, was still present. Oops. How do I go back? Okay. And this is a really nice picture showing this, that here's the injection site, here's the sentinel node, and then at 24 hours, you can see that you can still see the injection site even though most of it's cleared, but the sentinel node is still sitting there. So in communities and things where it's difficult for the patient to get into nuclear medicine, if they can come in 1 or 2 days before and get injected, and then you know that you still have an accurate sentinel node a couple of days later, this is really great. And again, the percent of injected dose, 1.8%, which is actually huge. So we know that the sentinel node is taking up that imaging agent, it's binding, and it's staying there. Okay, let's see. The next thing is that the company that had been interested in this, so we did this all by ourselves, basically, with just kind of NeoProbe watching in the background, no funding for them or anything. They then were very interested in buying the agent, and so in 2006, the IND for this particular use was transferred to them. Part of the patent was transferred to them. And then they started initiating. They now controlled the agent and started initiating the rest of the trials. They did a phase two trial, which was 5 centers, which basically now was comparing the other standard that we use in sentinel node imaging is blue dye, and the FDA views blue dye as something standard to view imaging agents against. And so NeoProbe decided to now look at lymphoseek against blue dye. They did the first phase two with no safety issues. And then they initiated the phase threes, basically. The phase three studies were 15 sites throughout the country. We were the single highest enroller overall. We capped out on our breast patients, and then we were one of the highest enrollers for melanoma as well. So it was actually two phase three studies. The first one, after it was done, the company went to the FDA, and they wanted to see a few more patients, and so they repeated the phase three. And so basically the exact same thing. And the goal of this was to compare lymphoseek against the blue dye that we use for sentinel node imaging, and to basically assess the presence or absence of cancer in these lymph nodes as well. That's just, again, showing very nice uptake of the agent. So, again, the injection and the agent, and you can see on spec also it imaging. So the two phase threes were concluded, and this is where, again, I'm going to get personal on this. The first phase three that we did we really hadn't done anything like this before. And for an imaging agent in a normal breast cancer patient who's not horribly sick and getting labs all the time, adding three or four sets of labs is difficult. And there were a lot of the first phase three, there were a lot of times where like a lab was supposed to be at 3 o'clock and it was at 3:15, or a patient refused their midnight lab, or they refused to come back in for their post-op because we're dealing with clinical medicine. And so because of that, we had a lot of protocol violations in our first phase three. There were probably over 100. In the second phase three, we cleaned it up a lot. We realized, you know, that really going to have to, you know, urge our patients to stay on time and, you know, document better and everything. And so in late 2011, when the phase threes were complete and NeoProbe went to the FDA for final approval, of course, the FDA said, well, we're going to audit your highest accruer. We're going to come to UCSD and we're going to audit you. So he had the biggest FDA audit that the Cancer Center has ever seen in 2011. And I will tell you that my regulatory people probably almost quit over this, because the compliance people, the attorneys, et cetera, were sure that UCSD was going to be in big trouble because of all of the protocol violations that we'd had on the first phase three. Even though they were well documented, everything was reported to the IRB, and everything was covered, they were sure because there were so many of them. And they actually wanted to handle the audit a little bit differently than we decided to handle it. We decided to be very honest with the FDA auditor. I'll tell you, there was one example where my op report said left and it was actually right. And he asked me about it. And I said, you know what? I get out of the OR at 11 o'clock at night. I dictate my cases and I dictated it wrong. And I said, I need to go correct that. And he was like, great. Thank you for being honest. Each and every case went over like that. Each and every little protocol violation. And he was like, you know, I know how clinical medicine is. And he was good with it. He wanted to know that I knew every single solitary patient who got this agent. And he wanted to know that it didn't affect the science, and that I wasn't just a PI somewhere like a figurehead. And so I think in the audit went beautifully. We didn't get nothing. I mean, we got no dings whatsoever. And so now the company put in for FDA approval, so a year and a half later, the drug was just approved about 2 weeks ago. April 13th, 2013, the final approval came out. So that's the end of a long surgical story here, from bench to bedside, basically, that really took a fabulous relationship between a basic scientist and me. And so I would urge, because I think most people in here are maybe slight clinicians, but more basic people, be patient with your clinician, because it in the end, if you want to get something to patient care, it is going to be the doctor that understands what the patient is thinking, that can explain these drugs to the patient and can understand the nuances, and you have to have a respect for that, because in the end, we want patient safety and we want something great for the patient. So I'm going to stop there, because I think I've gone on for a while. Thank you.